The Racing Riot podcast is sponsored by Members Club Ultimate, the Racing Post's premium service. As a listener of the show, you can get an exclusive discount. Use the code JANRIOT to get 50% off your first 2 months. Members Club Ultimate gives you access to the digital newspaper the night before it's released, full video replays of British and Irish racing, plus expert tipping from our pros and exclusive news and interviews with insight and analysis much better than mine, and so much more to ensure you're up to date with the racing industry, especially as we head towards the Cheltenham Festival. Click on subscribe, select Get Ultimate Monthly, and enter all of your info, and then at the checkout, use the code JANRIOT. That's JANRIOT. Hello and welcome to the Racing Riot podcast. Today we've got a cracking episode. I'm alongside Charlie Post. We're going to be speaking to Adam Wedge, who had a brilliant Christmas. We're going to reflect on his win on Silver Streak, his Welsh national victory on Secret Reprieve, and some exciting novices like Stargate, plus getting a bit of a comment on a controversial statement that he made after the race. And then we'll also be touching on David Mullins, who retired from the saddle at age just 24. We'll preview the return of Bouvardet and what that could mean for the champion hurdle market. And Harry Skelton, Nube Negra, interesting, he's been jocked off Politolog at the weekend in favour of riding Nube Negra at the Champion Chase. We'll reflect on what that exactly means. But let's get straight into things. A man who had a brilliant ride in the Welsh National, he had a phenomenal Christmas, it's Adam Wedge. Adam, how are you doing? And first and foremost, it must be weird looking back on that Christmas period with so many good things to think about.
Yeah, it was a fantastic few days over Christmas for us, and yeah, it's been a brilliant time over Christmas. It's been brilliant.
Just reflecting on Silver Streak, I mean, you were going there to Kempton in theory as a, you know, sort of like you were going to make the, you not make the numbers up, but make the pace, and Epitant was going to come sweeping by you. I just wanted, you know, the thoughts that you put into that ride as a whole and the professional satisfaction it must have given you, one, winning a Grade 1 for Ev on a big stage like that, and two, turning over the reigning champion hurdler Epitant.
Yeah, look, it was fantastic, and it was a plan that me and Evan had come up with over Christmas. We were talking every day over Christmas that we thought we had to change something. We had to find five lengths in theory, and going through the race, we thought it was the time in Silver Streak's career to go and have a good go and put some of the horses to the test. And if it didn't work, we probably would have finished second anyway, you know. We just thought it was our time to go and lay it all on the line and have a good crack at them, you know.
And just moving forward now, look, he's a Grade 1 winning hurdler, so it doesn't really matter, but do you think you can find the necessary improvement now for him to become champion hurdler?
He always runs his race. He was third in the champion hurdle a couple of years ago. And I think now because everything's been done the right way, we can ride him that bit more positive, a bit more handy. You know, he hasn't got to go and make the running, but we can ride him good and handy. And I think that will help us a lot. You know, in his earlier days, he was very keen and gassy, and he had to be dropped in and switched off and then creep away through them. But he's grown up a lot as a horse the last year, which helps you a lot, you know.
And will he go straight to the champion hurdle now, or will we see him somewhere in between?
I'd say it'll be all systems go straight to Cheltenham.
I thought the writing was on the wall a long way home, and I thought it was a great ride. Another great ride, and this was probably the highlight of your Christmas, I'd imagine, was in the Welsh National on Secret Reprieve. Still a novice, won very, very, very impressively. Just how far can he go?
Look, he's done everything the right way. He's progressed very, very nicely. You know, we looked after him as a novice, and he was still very inexperienced last year. And coming to this year, you know, he seems to have improved at home. He's shown all the right signs, and every run he takes, he's taken a big step forward. If he can keep doing that, hopefully we can go to war in some of them nice big handicaps, you know.
Is the end game this season the Aintree Grand National, or could that be a year too soon?
Hey, look, we'll see how he comes how he comes out of this race now and see what he's showing us at home. I certainly wouldn't rule it out of the picture this year, but, you know, I leave that down to Evan and William and Angela. They, you know, Evan knows his horses very well, and he'll see him at home, and he'll know whether he'd be ready to go for it this year or whether to wait a year, you know?
And it was a big win for Evan, winning the Welsh Grand National. I think it was his 8th attempt or 7th attempt. Just how good of a trainer is he, and how much did it mean to him?
Look, he's a very, very good trainer. He knows his horses inside out, you know? And it's a race that Evan's always held close to his heart. He'd always try, and he's looking for that horse that can go and win a Welsh National. And to win it for him, it means a lot, you know? And it meant a lot for Evan as well. It did.
You could tell that in his post-race interview, and the pride, I think, about from you and what you've been through on that day. Because I just want to go back, and, you know, the early part of your season this year was injury plagued. You'd already missed out on the big winner at Cheltenham, and, you know, you'd obviously had the Grade One over Christmas, coming into it sky high with confidence, and then lo and behold, you take two humdingers of falls earlier on in the card. And just to give people an insight mentally, how are you feeling sat in the weighing room?
It's easy to think, Jesus, this is how my day's going, you know, we've ended up rolling around on the floor first couple of rides, but you have to go out there and ride the next race as if nothing's happened the rest of the day. You can't go out there thinking, Jesus, it's not my day today, you know. You've got to go out there with a fresh slate every race and just ride it as they come, you know. It is a tough old game, you know. But you've just got to pick yourself up and keep taking a step forward, you know.
Completely agree. And, you know, you were obviously checked out by the doctor after each of your falls.
Yeah.
And no, because it is an interesting point, because I heard some people almost criticising the doctor, because the consensus was Adam then took a few days off, so maybe he was carrying a slight injury or whatever. But I've been there myself, and all the doctor can do, and I'm sure Adam will confirm this, is ask you the obvious questions. You're asked about who is the latest champion jockey, Grand National winner, all these things to make sure that you're mentally all there, and they will check you over physically. But if you are able to suck it up, answer all the questions and grit your teeth and make out like there's nothing wrong, then I'm right in saying, Adam, there's not a lot they can do, really, is there?
No, look, there's not. You know, we've just been out riding a race and our adrenaline is up high, you know. We get a fall and we jump to our feet, you know, that's the way we are. Obviously, we've gone into the doctor's room and he's asked all the questions, we've answered all the questions. He grabs all of my arms and he makes sure everything's still working okay, and, you know, and as long as I'm saying, yeah, I'm good to go, he can't, as long as I've done everything right, it's not the doctor's fault. I know, you know, you're very sore, but I'm looking forward to the Welsh National. It'd take a lot to keep me off that, you know.
I just love that in this modern world of sort of pampered prima donnas, like there is sports where the performers can still suck it up, roll their sleeves up and show a bit of toughness and desire to go out there and get it done, you know?
You've got to think, if that was a football player, they'd be out for a couple of months.
Well, the Welsh National wouldn't matter, would it? You know, it'd be like, no, thank you. Get me in the doctor's room and let's go and put my feet up for a while. Then, so you go out there and irrespective of injury or, you know, physically hurting, like you say, your adrenaline gets going, you deliver a perfect ride on the big race favourite, race in the bag, you get interviewed afterwards. And I just wanted to briefly touch on, because again, I have my own thoughts about it, the post-race interview and your comment about it being a man's sport at the end of the day. And just for the listeners, what you actually meant by that, because I know you didn't mean it in the way that it's been slightly perceived in some quarters.
Yeah, look, I know some people have taken it in the wrong way, and I can see how it's done, you know. But it was just a tough day for myself where, you know, I've had to pick myself up off the floor a couple of times, and you're just trying to get across the point of how hard it is. And there's plenty of women out there that are doing exactly the same as me, you know. It's just a tough, tough sport. And, you know, maybe the words came out a little bit wrong. It's a tough game rather than a man's game, you know, I should have said. But That's the way it came out, but it certainly wasn't meant that way, you know?
I mean, credit to you for coming out and apologising, but exactly, I think all that was meant by the statement, which is just a turn of phrase, whether it's dated or not, is like, it's a physically tough sport. It's not like Crown Green bowling.
No, definitely not.
But let's move on from that. You've inherited a pretty tasty ride this weekend on Magic of Light at Ascot, who goes up against Roxana. How does it feel to have a ride for Jessica Harrison on a big Saturday?
It would be lovely, but I'm going to Haydock, unfortunately.
Oh, no way. This is the issue of recording it before decks are completely through. But all jokes aside, to be sort of in the running to ride a horse at second in a Grand National and trained by one of the top performers in Jesse Harrington, an Irish trainer, must give you a lot of confidence.
Oh, definitely. Look, the puppy rang me up in the week and said, look, if you are an Ascot, you know, you can ride her. And to know that, you know, likes of Jessica Harrington and Robbie Power are putting me forward for rides like that, you know, it does give you a lot of confidence. And it's nice to know that everyone else thinks enough of you to put them on them sort of horses. You know, they're very, very good horses. And to even be offered the chance to ride it, it's an honour, you know.
And Ev's got a lot of exciting talent in there, hasn't he? Stargate, to name a few, and the Rockers are putting plenty of money in. It's nice to see them getting some proper results with some top level success, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. You know, they do a lot for the game, and they do a lot for me and Evan. You know, they put a hell of a lot into it, and see them reap the rewards is fantastic. You know, to ride their first Grade One winner last year was brilliant. Stargate was second in a Grade One. And, you know, hopefully we can keep finding them horses. It'd be brilliant.
Adam, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for speaking to us and best of luck for the weekend.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Charlie, great to speak to him. I think for me, it was almost a crowning moment when he won the Welsh National on Secret Reprieve. You know, many people are guilty of flicking onto Twitter straight away and seeing the reaction to it. And he had some brilliant comments from Davy Russell saying what a ride that was. And what happened to the saddle?
So what happened there was the girth had actually snapped.
So, how difficult was that to ride?
Well, so what you're left with is just the one elasticated, what we call the overgirth, which goes round on top of the girth to as a fail-safe should the girth snap. And so what you've happened is he's riding on a very small saddle because he's doing a lightweight. And then you can see that the breast girth, because it's connected to the girth, which is the breast girth is what goes round the horse's chest to stop the saddle from slipping back down the horse's back, has snapped, will come loose as well because it's connected to the girth. So all of a sudden, as the horse is galloping out and moving forward, the saddle is moving the other way. So it's going further and further back down the horse's back. Well, as you can imagine, to then sort of balance as it's becoming a bit shaky and the stability of the girth holding everything in place is gone, it takes a certain amount of balance, especially after 3.5 miles in very testing conditions, after two humdingers of fours already in the day. And so, he was helped by the fact that the horse won relatively comfortably, as in it would have made even more of an issue if we're in a nip and tuck finish. But it still is testament to Adam Wedge's balance, finesse and skill, you know.
On the naked eye, those are the things that you just wouldn't see. So it's great to get a jockey's point of view. Let's touch on the controversial statement, because I know it wound a few people up. The reaction wound many people up. And so what's interesting is the Racing Post did an article about it, and Adam Wedge came out and apologised for the statement. And the statement was, it's a man's game. And my initial reaction looking at the backlash that the Racing Post got, and I think that was slightly unfair. I'd imagine if Adam didn't want to say anything, he didn't have to. I think he said that he apologised for it. It's a tough game rather than a man's game. And for me, people were looking for it. You've got to look at, he was coming off the back of two nasty falls. People weren't sure if he was going to have the ride. It's Evan Williams, his retained trainer, with a very short price favourite, with a horse that many people were looking at going, I'm not sure why this horse is so short, who's absolutely hacked up. Adam Wedge has had a brilliant Christmas, and given the circumstances, I think I just thought it was so clear that he didn't mean it was a man's sport. And I do think racing's in the position where it's a really tricky one. I think many things within racing get misconstrued and get heightened and exaggerated purely because people are looking for something to moan about. And for me, it was nice to see the reaction on Twitter, especially in the female camp and the female jockeys defending Adam and going, look, I know exactly what he meant. It probably wasn't the greatest wording of all. People were looking for something. Women's game, like I alluded to earlier, has grown so much in such a recent years. Do you think in 10 years ago that comment would have been even blinked at?
I don't think it would have even registered.
Exactly.
And the fact of the matter is, it is a turn of phrase. Maybe it is dated. It probably is dated. Mm. There's no doubt it is dated. But it is just a turn of phrase in reference to something is tough rather than it being only men can do it. Now, like I say, maybe it does need to change. Did I think it was necessary, the sort of backlash that Adam Wedge got? I found it slightly surprising because, like I say, I could tell from the interview that he didn't mean it in any way, that it was that some people were trying to turn it round into putting words into his mouth, and he didn't mean it like that at all. Like you say, what was positive was there was a lot of support for him on Twitter and social media, and especially from the female members of the weighing room coming out and saying this is ludicrous. To gain equality, we have to become slightly, not less sensitive, but have the ability to just rise above things and accept that we're all competing on a level playing field, or we're trying to more and more. And it is something that racing does do very well. Mm. And what always disappoints me is it's like we forget to champion the positives about the sport. And it's like all the time we're just trying to smash it. And it is one sport where at the moment, there's no doubt opportunities were limited in times gone by, but I think more and more it is becoming much more of a level playing field. And if as a female rider you're good enough, you're going to be accepted just like one of the lads, and you're in there competing with them on a level playing field, doing your best. Holly Doyle, Rachel Blackmore, Bryony Frost,
Hayley Turner,
Josephine Gordon. The list goes on and on, which is great, because I remember when I started, there was probably like Joanna Badger, Kathy Gatt, you know, there was two or three, and they were pretty much on the flat only. Whereas now you're seeing so many across the sphere make a breakthrough and make a start. And like in Ireland, I think Rachel Blackmore is two or three behind in the Irish Jockeys Championship.
Over here, Bryony Frost won the King George.
And Holly Doyle, is she a contender for the Flat Jockeys Championship this year?
Almost certainly.
It's a possibility, isn't it? So let's also have balance to all of this and champion what racing does do well. And it is becoming a sport that offers massive opportunity. And also the big thing I thought racing missed out on was, as I said, talking to Adam, in a world of sports stars, of pampered, often overplayed prima donnas, here is a sport where a guy's getting paid 150 quid, or a girl, to go out and risk their lives, in not being overly dramatic about it, but risk injury and whatever else that comes with it. He's had two big falls on the day, and he's sucked it up and gone out and delivered a copybook ride on a big race favourite. And to me, in my sports performers, be they male or female, I still value toughness, strength of mind and physical endurance to overcome things, to still deliver winning performances. And that, to me, should have been the headline, that look at this sport, look at the values it still holds true, and champion the good in things, whilst also maybe offering a bit of balance about the slightly sloppy, dated comment he made in the post-race interview, instead of making it all about that and missing out on what was a real triumph of physical and mental endurance.
I think not much more needs to be said. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think many people can take a leaf out of jockeys' books. I always feel extremely motivated whenever I'm with you or with anyone else, because the dedication that you put in and the hours that you put in and the sacrifices that you make to make things happen, like even getting up at the times you do,
yeah.
that takes a skill, and that takes a certain drive and a real motivation. And especially in the current climate, to keep going and to be as strong as the whole racing community has been and has needed to be for racing to survive during this period, I think everyone needs to take their hat off and give themselves a big tap on the back.
And I think we can see the toughness required within the sport when we're going to reflect on our next topic with David Mullins, 24 years of age, I think a multiple grade one winning rider, grand national winner at 19, has stepped away from it because he said
his heart was no longer in the game and he struggled with the lifestyle required. The actual quote was, "I think I realised during Galway Summer Festival in 2019 that the whole thing wasn't for me. When you're in the racing bubble and riding horses, it's very hard to think outside of that bubble, and I needed to get out of it." What does that mean for racing?
Well, it sort of helps to, again, amplify the comments that you've just made and what we're saying about the physical and mental endurance these riders need to maintain performing at that level. And I mean, you wonder with David Mullins if he had success so early in life. Like, I'm not saying he's been there and done it, but he's won a Grand National. He's won multiple graded races. He feels that he's part of Willie Mullins' riding team, but therefore that means on a day-in, day-out level, he's not getting constant riding and he's having to wait for the big spring festivals to pick up major opportunities to ride graded winners. But it's not disappointing because it's a personal choice. And I admire the fact that he's showing that level of maturity at 24 to say, do you know what, I'm not keen on this anymore and I'm going to step away from it rather than just carrying on doing something that I'm not enjoying. Mm. But it does, like I say, it does highlight a lot of issues because this is a guy that is having success. Now, whether it's day in, day out success, but he's already ridden over 200 winners. He's rode 40 graded winners in those 200 winners. So there's been loads of quality. And it does show when you're going further down the pecking order, what it takes for a lot of these riders who are maybe riding not even double figure winners and certainly no big winners and maybe 150 rides a year just to keep chugging away to keep the sport on a roll. And you need those people on a day in, day out basis to keep it going. And it does show the pressures involved.
I thought this was a really interesting quote as well. He added, when you leave school at 16, you feel trapped into being a jockey.
But does that come from the family, if you know what I mean? That you're a Mullins, so that's what's expected of you?
I think so. I was going to touch on that after. He said, it's relentless. There is no break. You're always on call. If you decide not to go to Sligo for one ride on a 33-1 shot, you're called a lazy, we'll say git, for not getting up off your ass and going. And I've been called that many times. I had disagreements with my agent over it. He would get annoyed, and I suppose I can see where he was coming from. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with going to Sligo or Bannon Robe or anywhere for one ride, and we're not saying those tracks are the lesser attractive tracks. And I've done it myself over the years, but I found that as a jockey, you were always on call and never got a break. I've been trying to figure out loads of different things to do, but when you're in the bubble, it can be very hard to think outside the bubble. I think this could be a direct consequence of being in a family that's so closely related to racing. Everyone in that family seems like they have some sort of association with racing. You've got to look at Willie, Patrick,
Danny.
Just go on and on and on. And on. Yeah. And could this be a direct consequence of that, where a young David Mullins is there going, I've not really got much choice. I'm going to have to go into racing. I ride out horses every day. And at a young age, he sees no other option. And now he's got to an age of 24 and he goes, you know, I quite would have liked to do something different. But because my family is so heavily invested in the sport, I don't really feel like I can.
I think you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what it comes across like. What I admire is the honesty of this interview. Like, it is very open, kind of from the heart and telling it exactly how he is and how he feels. And it does almost seem like a young man sort of trapped within that racing bubble and certainly like a highly intense, incredibly successful dynasty, shall we say.
And we're not saying that he didn't enjoy the time in racing.
Not at all.
And that he didn't have success. But he said here, there were times when I would ride a winner, but I would come home depressed because the other three didn't win. Is that almost an attitude where at a young age he's looked at the sport and gone, okay, I'll give it a go. My whole family's invested in it, with the hope that he's going to make it to the real top level, like, and have success like your Ruby Walsh's early on, And that didn't come. So that's when self-doubt came into his head.
I would imagine so. As in, like I say, he won a Grand National at 19, which is a phenomenal achievement in itself. Never mind
to have a ride in the Grand National at 19.
I never had one. So, you know, as in, and to manage to ride, like I say, to ride 215 winners and 40 of them are graded winners, it shows a real ability to perform at the highest level. But like you say, whether with all that success early on, he then hoped he would immediately be elevated to a top job, and whether that might have changed his mindset, and all of a sudden, it's not that it hasn't happened, because there still has been big winners, but he's had to accept his place within the pecking order at Willie Mullins's, and therefore there's not that day in, day out motivation of the quality to make it sustainable in his own mind. Whereas I'm sure there is 95% of the weighing room in Ireland or Britain would swap places with him in a heartbeat. But this is obviously his own feelings about it. And you have to respect, like I say, the honesty that he's come out with and the ability, in spite of this success, to step away from it all at this time.
So we've got three small topics we do need to talk about. The return of Bouvier, who potentially might run at Haydock this weekend. He's an intended runner, but the ground is suggesting otherwise. How much of a curveball could he throw in the Cheltenham Champion Hurdle Anti-Post Market? Because at the moment, in Ireland, Sharjah won at Christmas, and you're thinking, St. Rewire, Abacadabras, they were disappointing. You know, we're really looking forward to them stepping up, and I'd imagine they're going to run at the Dublin Racing Festival behind Honeysuckle. Notice I said behind. And in England, Epitome was beaten by Silver Street. We touched on that with Adam Wedge earlier. If Bouvier is back to his best, and look, I think it's a very, very, very long shot, given the injury that he had, the time that he's had off the track, and it's going to be really testing the conditions against, I know two horses in the race are Ballyandy and A Song for Someone, who's had a great season. If he can dispose of them like an old Bouvier would, he must have a great chance in the Champion Hurdle. But how unlikely is that when a horse is that long off?
Well, it's unlikely, but he is trained by a genius for that sort of achievement or the ability to get that out of a horse in Nicky Henderson. He's a dual champion hurdler, isn't he? And when we're looking down, as you say, the Anti-Post Market, Epitome has to be question marks after Christmas Hurdler. Again, you wouldn't put it past it to bounce right back at Cheltenham. Sharjah's been there before and been beaten, as a Silver Streak. Aspire Tower of Henry de Bromhead's is maybe an emerging one on this sort of level and this sort of scene. And then you're down to Bouvier. And like you say, Song for Someone, if the race goes ahead on Saturday, which we're saying is highly unlikely, is a proper test. Because Song for Someone is a real emerging horse at this sort of level and could be throwing his own hat into the ring, possibly. And I think if Bouvier does dispose of them, then there's no reason to think, with his record at Cheltenham at the festival, that he can't go back there as a big player. And certainly, if he did happen to win impressively at Haydock on Saturday, he's going to go down to a single-figure price in the Champion Hurdle Anti-Post Market.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say Nicky Henderson will be desperate for Haydock if it doesn't go on Saturday to run and be rescheduled as soon as possible, potentially next weekend or early next week. Because I think the gap between now and the festival with a horse like Bouvier, who at the moment is fragile, will be huge in the fact in his Champion Hurdle chances. Let's talk about Altiora then, the Champion Chase or Ryanair. That's what I've got down as a topic. Interesting, he's been entered in both. Many suggested after the Desert Orchid that the Ryanair would be his best chance of winning at the festival. Nicky Henderson's come out this week, and it seems to me like he's apparently the vibes from the area, that was the title, is that the Champion Chase is the target. I think this is ludicrous. I think he's got a far better chance of winning a Ryanair purely because, I don't know, some sort of psychological thing in me just thinks that Min is probably the favourite for the Ryanair, and he's disposed of Min so many times. Could he do it again in the Ryanair? He didn't look particularly quick over his fences. He didn't look like he had too much of a turn of foot in the Desert Orchid as well. And I'm not taking anything away from a horse like Nude Negra. He was brilliant on the day. But in times and years gone by, would you have expected that form? Not whatsoever. So I can't understand why. Well, I can understand because he's a proven champion chase winner, dual champion chase winner. But when you look at the young ones coming through, you've got Shaq and Poussoir, even the two horses that finished behind him at Christmas, a Notebook and Put the Kettle On. Over here, you've got Politolog, who's going to run at the weekend. Defi de Soy, if he's back to his best, wouldn't be far away. You've also got Noob Negra. I think he's got a better chance of winning the Ryanair.
Look, is the Ryanair a marginally weaker option than the Champion Chase at the Festival? Yeah, it is. So I hear your point. And it saddens me to say this, I don't think Altior can win either, being completely honest. I think Altior is all about 2 mile, and I think at his peak, he relished a very strongly run 2 mile that was just having him on the peak of being able to travel on the bridle, as we say, so travel comfortably. So he was at top gear, and then through the latter part of the race, as the pace was slackening, his class and that sort of after kick that he had, the ability to maintain it, would come to the fore, and away he would go from the opposition. And I'm not sure he stretches out to 2.5, even though at times it's looked all the way through like he might do. And my feeling is it's more looking again like he wants 2.5 after Kempton at Christmas, because his ability is on the wane rather than the fact that he's just crying out to go further in trip. I really hope I'm proved wrong, because I love the horse and what a star he's been throughout his career. And again, we should cherish and reflect on that, whatever happens. But for me, I can't see him winning either race at the Festival.
And then another angle in the Champion Chase is Harry Skelton doesn't ride Politolog in the Clarence House Chase at Ascot on Saturday. Interesting one, this. Harry Cobden takes a ride or inherits the ride. I know he's stable jockey to Paul Nicholls. And I think Skelton said to the owners that, look, I'm stable jockey for my brother Dan, and Noob Negra will be the ride in the Champion Chase if both of them turn up. And I think that the connections have looked on that and gone, okay, fine, we want Harry Cobden to develop a relationship on Politolog before then. So I can understand from that point, but I've got this tiny thing in my head that Harry Skelton, if he really thought Politolog, and we're talking about a Champion Chase here, although Harry Skelton's had plenty of success in the last 5 years, but more so in the last year, I don't think much of it will get better than Politolog's win in the race last year. I'm not sure he'd be chucking away a ride as good as Politolog that easily. Something in my mind says that he might fancy Noob Negra slightly more.
I think if they both turn up in the Champion Chase on the Wednesday in March, regardless of whether it's true or not, the Skeltons will believe that Noob Negra is better than Politolog, because that's their mindset. And if they're going, they'll be all in. And hey, it's easy, isn't it, always within racing and sport and life to say that it was a fluke at Kempton. Well, if it wasn't a fluke, there was a lot of authority to the way he travelled through the race and did it like he did. And on nice ground in March, I don't see, if that run is the real deal, then he's got to be a contender, hasn't he? And look, Politolog at the moment looks better than ever. You know, he's won a Champion Chase and backed it up with the Tingle Creek. But he's been beat before plenty. You know, you wouldn't say he's an outstanding champion, much as he's a very, very good horse. And there's part of me wonders, was it in the back of Harry's mind to say, oh, you know, I will ride Politolog in March just so he can ride him on Saturday and hopefully win another Grade One, and then come March say, oh, I'm really sorry, but Dan's decided he's going to run Noob Negra now, and that's the way it goes. But I think, again, what you're seeing is the Skeltons have a long-standing relationship with the Hales family, from Nick having show jumpers for them in the past. And so there's a lot of respect there. And I think after Noob Negra being so impressive at Kempton, John Hales has said, look, whoever rides Politolog in the Champion Chase, which, Harry, you've got first call on, we want them to ride them on Saturday at Ascot, ride the horse on Saturday at Ascot to get a feel for them, as you say. And I think Harry and Dan have probably had a chat and had to discuss it, and they've decided, look, that's where Noob Negra's going. And for the continuity of the relationship and the maintaining of it, that they're better off saying that and Harry stepping aside on Saturday. And I think, again, it shows loyalty, doesn't it? You know, Harry and Dan, their operation is growing. We've reflected on previous podcasts of the change in dynamic to be far more orientated around quality, and we've seen that this season. And they're looking at the next 10 years rather than just maybe the short-term gain of winning the Clarence House for Harry on Saturday. And so you have to respect that.
I know Harry Cobden's had success on Politolog before, but what seems to have unlocked another gear and another level in Politolog has been Harry Skelton's real attacking ride and firing him at every fence with ultimate confidence. Will Harry Cobden be able to do that? I don't doubt he's got the ability to, but he's not done it before. So I suppose that's going to be a big question mark. And look, if I had an anti-post look at the race, I'd be having slight doubts now over Politolog purely because he just seemed to get on with Harry Skelton so much.
It's a really excellent point because, as you say, both are excellent jockeys, but both have different styles. And as you quite rightly say, maybe Harry Skelton's very attacking, aggressive style of riding has suited Politolog, and alongside Paul tweaking his training regime, Paul Nichols has managed to unlock this improvement that we've seen over the 12 months. So it's going to be really interesting on Saturday, isn't it, to see whether Harry Cobden can get the same tune out of him or whether he can adapt his riding style to maybe be more aggressive on him in the mould of Harry Skelton. Because you would think, and Harry Cobden's a very intelligent rider, that he's going to look at the way Harry Skelton has been riding Politolog and try and factor that into the way that he's going to ride him, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I'd say different ride, but wouldn't surprise me if we saw him tearing off like he did on Surname round Ascot. I'm no jockey, but that's how I would ride him.
Well, I think he's definitely going to go forward, isn't he? And he's definitely going to try and make use of the fact that Politolog's an excellent jumper. Whether we're going to get the absolute concrete answer on Saturday, I wouldn't know. And yeah, I mean, obviously, you'd imagine he will hopefully win on Saturday and it will set it up. It will add more spice to the Champion Chase mix, which is really sort of building up to be a fantastic race at the festival.
Absolutely. Great to speak to Adam Wedge and great to touch on the other topics as well. Best of luck for David Mullins in the future and have a good week, Charlie.
Cheers, mate.